Live from CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. 8 days ago, a 7.8 magnitude earthquake devastated Turkey and Syria, followed by a 7.5 magnitude aftershock. Since then, nearly 36,000 people have been killed, a death toll expected to continue to rise. Complicating the response, this region has been struggling with political instability and unrest for years, making it difficult for humanitarian aid organizations to respond effectively to this disaster. Also, concerns about Turkey's president, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, and his coalition government's mismanagement have raised concerns about the death toll and if it could have been minimized. The disaster is one of the most complex and challenging humanitarian crises in recent history, with issues that spill into Syria, where an ongoing civil war dates back more than a decade. Helping us unpack the history and the challenges is UC Davis Professor of History with an emphasis on the Middle East, Baki Tezcan. Well, Professor Tezcan, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You know, given that it's been 1 week since the deadly quake and almost equally a strong aftershock in Turkey and Syria, I mean, we're learning that tens of thousands are dead and that number is expected to rise. We're also learning stories of just remarkable rescues that are still taking place days later, people going without water under the rubble for days on end. But given that you're a history professor with an emphasis on the Middle East, help us visualize the geography of the region that's devastated.
Well, the region that is devastated, where you see thousands of deaths, actually doesn't look very different than our urban centers. So yes, the larger region is quite different, maybe in many ways, but the devastation occurred in urban centers. I am following the Turkish news as closely as I can, and so I can comment more in a more informed fashion about Turkey. The largest number of deaths happened in high rises in urban centers. So in that sense, you can imagine, like areas like maybe downtown Sacramento. You can imagine buildings rising between 5 to 10 floors mostly. That is where most of the damage happened. That is where thousands of people died. Of course, there are also people who died in smaller environments. But at this moment in time, we don't even have enough news coverage about loss of life in villages, some of which may not have been even reached yet. Mm.
Have you spoken to students, friends, or family in the region about the situation and what they've told you about what's unfolding?
I do not have myself any family members in that area. However, I did reach out to a few colleagues who are from there or who have family there. A colleague of mine who teaches at UCLA, John Açıksöz, he said his family is okay, but his city, Antioch, is in ruins, and you can read about Antioch in the news, Antakya, in Turkish and also Arabic. That is one of the most damaged cities at this point. I also have a colleague who is from Aintab. He reported that his family is okay, but he's said so many people are homeless right now, tens of thousands of them in Aintab, in Turkish Gaziantep, and a former graduate student of mine is from Western Turkey, but his paternal family is from Maraş, Kahraman Maraş. He lost a family member, and his aunt's building has collapsed, half of it he reported. And of course, many, many, many thousands of people died. As of Monday, unfortunately, the death count had surpassed 30,000. So the damage is beyond our imagination.
Yeah, and we're learning about the region that it lies on top of tectonic plates and fault lines. Is this region prone to earthquakes?
Yes. The area exactly where it happened actually is one of the, I think, most prone areas, as it is very close to two lines getting together, and apparently that had an impact on having the second, what is supposed to be an aftershock, just as big as the first earthquake that hit early in the early hours of the day. So yes, historically, if you look at data, you find a great number of earthquakes that happened in eastern Anatolia in general, and the area Malatya, Marash, and Aintab, where it sort of the fault line passed through more or less, and Antakya, is particularly prone to heavy earthquakes.
So if that is the case, why was this latest earthquake so damaging and so deadly?
In the long range of history, I can tell you that people didn't live in high rises. And in the shorter range of history, what we can tell is there are two things that happened, it looks like. The government passed several amnesties that practically gave a blank check on buildings that were built according to old codes that didn't really factor the high rises, the impact of the earthquakes on the high rises. So a lot of buildings that were simply not up to where they needed to be were given an amnesty. And then another thing that is now being reported in various media outlets is that among those that actually were built according to the code, still quite a few buildings gave in, and that suggests either poor enforcement or perhaps corruption in the case of buildings that actually were weak and yet were given permits to be built.
Yeah, I mean, when you watch the videos, I mean, you just see buildings essentially crumble and collapse, I mean, with a lack of earthquake resiliency. And given that this area lies along fault lines and tectonic plates, there's been some comparison to earthquakes in the past, going back to 1999. Remind us what happened during that time.
In 1999, there was an earthquake that happened in northwestern Turkey, Gölcük area, around Marmara Sea, that also shook big cities in the northwest that are even more populous than the areas that shook this time. Istanbul was heavily affected. The death toll reached and I think surpassed 19,000 people, got close to 20,000. And right after that, actually, the government passed a series of new building regulations, again, that were upgraded in 2007 one more time and in 2018 one more time. But one does wonder whether those regulations have been followed, because now we see they have not been so much followed in the southeastern part of the country. And there was a lot of awareness raised. Erdogan at the time was the mayor of Istanbul, and then soon after that he became the leader of a political party that replaced the government in 2002, and he actually built his part of his success on his criticism of the government for not doing really well in terms of the earthquake.
So he was critical of the response back from 1999. And then now, once again, the Turkish government is criticized in its response to these last two earthquakes that took place, or the earthquake and the aftershock that took place last week. What stands out to you about the response as you're watching this unfold over the past week?
The government has been very slow to respond at the first 48 hours, and that has actually been admitted by Erdogan himself. The reports that I read in independent news outlets suggest that the slow response is not limited to the first 48 hours. In some cases, people cite coordination, lack of coordination, going all the way down to the fifth day, sometimes even into the sixth day. There are several factors in this, but I would emphasize one major factor, and that is the more recent sort of shift in government appointments to preferring candidates whose loyalty to the political party are unquestionable, very, very strong, rather than paying attention to competence. And one of these cases is really glaring in front of our eyes these days. Turkey's FEMA, what is the equivalent of FEMA in Turkey, is called AFAD, A-F-A-D. And AFAD's, one of AFAD's sort of directors that is supposed to be responsible for rescue operations and intervention in disasters, etc., turns out has a degree in Sufism, a master's degree in Sufism, and his career had been built in basically religious-related departments of the state, which actually there are some in Turkey, and in a foundation that is about religiosity. So this man, with no experience whatsoever, was appointed to direct a department of Turkish FEMA that was supposed to intervene in disasters. You can imagine the lack of competence this gentleman would have. It's just a glaring example. And then there are, I guess, other things one could cite, and that is where the funds go, funds collected for earthquakes, where do they exactly go? Do they really go into getting ready for a situation like this? That is the question that a lot of people in Turkey are asking these days.
Yeah, and there's an election coming up in May, correct, for President Erdogan. And what kind of impact do you think this will have not only to his potential re-election campaign, but also to his party?
I think this earthquake will have a devastating impact on him, and he knows that. So they are already talking about postponing the elections, and they are not so much talking about just, you know, a few months so that people could vote there. They're talking about 6 months to a year at the moment, which drew a lot of criticism from the opposition in the country and from independent news outlets. But he is very well aware that he may not do well, and he will probably lose the upcoming elections, and that's why he's going to do his best to postpone them as long as he can.
You know, moving on to Syria, I mean, how is the response, to your knowledge, different in Syria, where there is still an ongoing civil war, which began more than a decade ago?
As far as I can tell, the response in Syria is also has been very, very, very slow. And there, part of the troubles, I understand, lie in the fact that the areas that have been hit may not have been the most loyal to Assad's government. And so they are, in a sense, controlling aid flows into the country. And there are, people are citing difficulty of access to the regions that were hit by the earthquake in Syria. International agencies are not being able to get there as quickly as they need to.
I mean, we're talking about a myriad of kind of a hotbed of military activity, from, you know, ethnic Kurds and the Turkish government to rebel-held areas in Syria. There's a lot going on outside of this earthquake. How does this political dysfunction complicate the humanitarian response?
I am sure it is complicating it greatly. I should preface by saying that I do not follow the Syria situation as closely as I can, but following the situation in Turkey and how Turkish government is treating aid responses gives me a very good idea. In Turkey, the government is trying to control everything by itself, sometimes stopping civil society organizations on their way and even confiscating some of the aid that is going to particular places to take them and lead them elsewhere. So I can easily imagine in Syria, where the central government is in the hands of Assad, but then in the region there are different contenders also, these powers' internal dynamics, their conflict over who's going to control which region would definitely have an impact on how the aid is distributed, who gets access to the aid first, and who gets the credit for helping the people. So I'm sure that situation is much worse in Syria than it is in Turkey, where it is already pretty bad.
We're talking about non-government agencies that want to provide aid, and that's also foreign aid as well. Why is it so difficult to get foreign aid or even aid from non-government agencies into these areas that are heavily devastated?
I have read independent news accounts reporting from Turkey that the government stopped aid into the region if it originated from the opposition party related organizations, or the government criticized a civil society organization either directly or indirectly for their actions, as if they are trying to steal the show. So in Turkey, I know that Erdogan and his government would like to take all of the credit to themselves, and they also would like to help some people more than others. Erdogan, for instance, did not make a phone call to some of the mayors of the cities that were won by the opposition political party in the first days of the earthquake, and only came to call them after a lot of criticism was raised on social media. How come he's not calling some mayors and only calling others? So he does have favors. I'm sure this kind of thing is happening in Syria too.
Given that these conflicts are preventing or at least impacting progress, how long do you think recovery will take? And will it even be enough to restore all that was lost?
In the long term, I think Turkey has a lot of experience building. And although, as we can see, not always according to the code. In the past, in 1990, after the 1999 earthquake, they did build, they did rebuild. They also did rebuilding in earthquakes that happened in the early 21st century. So I can see that rebuilding will happen. And I can also imagine that Erdogan, having his own position in line, will probably push for some activity in the coming year. But it's going to take some time because we are talking about millions of people who are right now homeless. We are literally talking about millions of people who are homeless. So it's going to take a long time.
Given that there's so many people that want to help with donations, but, you know, sometimes we don't know where the money's going to go, what the supplies are going to be used for. What organizations do you or your colleagues suggest people look into if they want to donate?
I happen to be the president of Ottoman and Turkish Studies Association, and we had a board meeting today. We came up with a list that we will put on our website. Just to have, because this is a radio show and people can only probably remember one name, I'm going to suggest for Turkey the Turkish Philanthropy Funds. Turkish Philanthropy Funds has a very good sort of score in terms of philanthropy, as far as philanthropy goes. And Hamdi Ulukaya, you might never heard of his name, but he happens to be the CEO of Chobani Yogurts, if you ever...
Chobani. Yeah, the Greek yogurts.
Right.
A variety of yogurts.
Right. It is known as Greek yogurt. The gentleman is originally from Turkey, and I believe he's Kurdish. So he is probably from the region originally, from the region that is the larger region where the earthquake hit. So he put $1 million of his own into this already, and he's also matching up to another million. If you donate to Turkish Philanthropy Funds, he's matching, and they are guaranteeing zero administrative fees. So 100% of your donation will go into things that support the earthquake victims and rebuilding and etc.
Professor Tezcan, thank you so much for the time.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Baki Tezcan is a professor of history at UC Davis with a focus on Middle East studies, discussing the humanitarian crisis in Turkey and Syria following last week's powerful and deadly earthquake. Up next, tech layoffs are happening almost every day, but California is rolling out a plan to entice these workers into state service. We'll talk about the perks, the pay, and how you can apply. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio. I'm Vicky Gonzalez.